Tigers going for a sweep against the Giants today, 110. AJ joining us. AJ, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. We're marveling at how you guys always seem to be a step or two ahead. The Vierling injury, but then Perez steps up and hits a home run right away. This team's ability to be resilient, I continue to point to that as a highlight of this team. How does that come about?
Oh, that's a good question, because I'm impressed by our guys just resetting and taking whatever that challenge is that day. So we have good players, we have good depth, we've needed it. We don't even feel at full strength, which is a good feeling. But man, our guys really do take the whatever that day is going to bring and deal with it. I mean, we don't pout, we don't complain, we don't have kind of a wide range of attitudes or stress, and we'll deal with it. I mean, listen, we didn't play well in the Cleveland series. Reset, get back to square one a little bit, and here we are looking for a sweep.
What was the mindset of the team after those first three games in Cleveland? You mentioned it wasn't a great series, but obviously we know the Pascual performance. How do you look at this team, and how do you evaluate them and get them back on track? Or is that something that these guys take care of themselves?
Well, I mean, we're handing the ball to Scoobal, so how'd you feel coming into work that day? we feel pretty good, you know? So that, you don't want to put it all on him, but it is nice when that type of stuff is going on in a couple close games, and then, they beat us by a pretty big margin on a game that felt like it was closer than it was, and now we hand the ball to Tarek Skubal, and you're like, wake up, it's 11:30 in the morning, Tarek's throwing 100, which turned out to be light, by the time the game ended. So I think our guys, kind of understand, what it takes to run the race. Like I think the experience last September and August did show us, it's a daily grind and then figure it out the next day. And that physically, I think our guys are, getting better and better, but we weren't in a great place. Mentally, obviously, it's a beatdown when you get beat in division. But then Tarek Skubal's like, hey, boys, get on my back, and I'll rule the day, and he did.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on getting up and playing an 11:30 start. A lot of times we see one, rarely do we see noon, and almost never do we see 11:30. Your thoughts on that early start?
I hate it. I mean, I hate it for the players. I mean, I'm fine. Like, I'm 50. So I'm like, I get up and get coffee and I get going. So but I hate it for our players. One of the cool things about our team getting a little bit more exposure and a little bit more attention, we get the Fox game on Saturday night, happens to be the latest night game at 7:15 that we play. And we get rewarded with the national game on Roku at 11:35. So I don't love it physically for the players. I mean, obviously their side didn't love facing Skubal in the morning, but I understand kind of why the league is doing it. It's not great, but it's part of our schedule and we'll deal with it.
Talking to Tiger manager AJ Hinch this morning, Bob Melvin gets tossed yesterday. You didn't get tossed on Monday, but the same thing was, arguing balls and strikes. Are you in favor of this system people are talking about where you could challenge the call on a ball or strike?
Well, I think that's what the ABS is built for. If we ever get it up to this level, it's plays like that where, Javi gets a tough call. It's borderline. It's a big breaking ball. Like, you can kind of see, if you didn't have the box on the TV, you would see how close it is. But that's what it's meant for, is like, instead we'd have a guy on first base. We wouldn't lose a player, potentially lose a manager. You have a bunch of arguments back and forth. And the same thing kind of goes on the other side. We were the beneficiary of some tough calls and then Bob gets ejected. So I think that's why we're trending towards the ABS is to correct the calls, just so that the real stuff that happens on the field is not through interpretation. It's actually a ball is a ball and a strike is a strike. But it's, I think that's exhibit A for why the conversation is going on and why the sport is trying to evolve with the times. It's like, we talk about Skubal throwing 102.6. I don't know that everybody understands how fast that is for a player to react, for an umpire to react. The umpire doesn't know what's coming. So I think umpiring is getting harder and harder with the pitch shapes and the velo spike, and the ABS is on its way. And I'm sure that can be used as an example why.
in the offseason and as we get into the regular season, we in the media, and I know fans, we tend to talk more about individuals that didn't end up in Detroit. But a couple of guys that did, Gleyber Torres has had a great impact. Tommy Kahnle has had a great impact. We didn't highlight those necessarily as much as maybe we should have in the offseason. Do you and Scott Harris ever sit there and go, we tried to tell the fans?
Well, no, I want to ask you, why don't you talk about the guys that are here? You get to choose your show. Talk about our guys, you know? I mean, I'm poking fun at you guys because it's hard because, like, there's a lot of attention on what doesn't happen, and there are some under-the-radar things that do happen. And obviously, sometimes, you know, fans, media, everybody needs to see it before it really comes true. Like, Tommy Kahnle has gotten soft contact, swing and miss, and has been pitching in leverage roles for a pretty long time. Gleyber Torres played on a World Series caliber team in the toughest market imaginable and led off for that group. Probably loved hitting in front of Judge. But, there was a lot of good that came out of this winter, some of it being maturation of our young guys. But that's just sort of the state of baseball and the off season and who wins the off season. Like, I don't really care who wins the off season. I care who wins the Central, and I care who wins the league. And that's kind of what you gear towards when you're putting a team together, even if it's not as glorified as it could be.
Yeah, I think part of it is we're always gluttons. We always want more. But AJ, I think you guys have put more than enough on our plates with a 36-20 start. I want to circle back to Vierling. Just your level of concern with that injury setback. I don't know if surgery is necessary. Just could you update people on concern level with Vierling's injury?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard putting levels on it. I mean, obviously, we were really excited when he came back, and he came back and got a base hit, a big base hit down the right field line. He got a big base hit up the middle when I brought him off the bench. And he reported soreness, which the concern is because it's, you know, recurring. It's the same shoulder. It's a similar issue. And we've got to get him checked out. And we're at the point of the season where, as you see, like last night, I only played 9 position players, believe it or not. I didn't even use anybody off the bench, which, you know, want a little bit of love for that. But I think it's, you know, one of those things that we have to do a wait and see. I don't know what it means. And so when it's hard, I get right when Vierling reports that he's injured. Now we go through this battery of tests. The next day I'm asked, like, what does it mean? What's, you know, is there surgery? Is it massive time? Is it short time? Like, whoa, I have no idea. You know, so we need to get him assessed and we'll try to sprinkle it out there. I don't love putting a guy back on the injured list for the same injury, but I also don't know that it isn't anything more than a bump in the road. We'll see.
Any update on Parker Meadows since we're talking about injuries at this point?
Well, I love the 3 hits last night. You know, he's starting to get his volume built up. You know, I think he played 7 innings in center field. He's going to DH today. He draws the 11 a.m. minor league AAA game. Players love that in general. Players on rehab maybe are so mad when they get stuck in those games. But he's doing really well. It's just really volume right now. He's feeling good. He's making throws. He's swinging the bat very, very well in AAA. We've got to get him to 9 innings. He'll be off tomorrow. He'll play 9 innings maybe a couple times over the weekend, and then we'll continue to assess. The big number is 9 innings, repeating it and coming good out of it. So I don't know if it's next week. We have about, I think, 10 or 11 days left where he could rehab if we want him to. But, you know, 3 hits, you start to get close to 9 innings, you start to wonder, you know, if you can start to pinpoint a date that he can come back.
AJ, we had John Morosi on last week, you know, national perspective on this team. And we asked him, how many All-Stars? And he goes, I don't know, could be 5 or more All-Stars from this team. The voting's going to start in early June. You guys should get multiple players. Is there someone you want to stump for before the voting starts?
Man, I love how you called Morosi a national. Like, he's pro-Tiger. He's Michigan. He's Ann Arbor. He definitely has a national profile, but I do. It made me laugh a little bit. You know, I think Dylan Dingler deserves a lot of credit for what he's actually done. And I know there, you know, he's not the biggest name. He didn't even come into the season expecting to play as much as he did, or people didn't expect it. I thought it'd be a timeshare. He's grabbed a little bit of that opportunity. Obviously, Jake Rogers is really good, but Jake is catching today, and I got to get him incorporated. But Dylan, behind the plate, is a pretty good difference maker, and he's not going to get the love that, you know, Riley Green and Tarik Skubal and and Glaber and sort of more recognizable names, but Dylan's starting to establish himself as a very stable part of a good team. And you can't look at the pitching staff without looking at the catcher.
So on the heels of that conversation, how do you work the rotation behind the plate with Jake, who last year caught every game that Tarek Skubal threw, but we just saw Dylan Dygler catch a great performance on
Sunday. The best start of his career, yeah.
How do you manage that rotation?
Well, the Tarek part is easy because Tarek, you know, doesn't change his performance based on the catcher. Tarek's really good. So every pitcher is good with every catcher that we have. My goal is to get Jake into every series right now. So we had, you know, two games so far with San Francisco. Jake's going to catch today. We go to Kansas City. Ding's going to catch probably Friday and Saturday. I'll get Jake in on Sunday. And it's just going to be two on, one off, three on, one off until further notice. And I told Jake, like, listen, it's right now, it's a pretty hot hand, and he's doing a very, very good job. And Jake kind of laughed at me. He's like, just look at the scoreboard. Like, you can tell, like, he's doing really well. So everybody understands, and I'll work Jake in to where it's a tick of a timeshare, but Ding's earned the right to catch, let's call it two or three in a row, and then I'll get Jake in there. I don't want players in general not playing for a full series. If you want guys to be good when you need them, and we need our guys a lot, playing every series or getting a plate appearance or getting out on the field defensively, we're a sport built on timing and rhythm, and you need to play to do that.
Is that sense of the awareness for Jake Rogers? Just look at the scoreboard, and it sounds like, hey, he understands it's all about winning, and it's somewhat of an unselfish take. We've seen it from Javi Baez. Yeah, I'll play center, I'll play third, I'll play short.
Colt Keith, hey, move me wherever you need me.
Is that somewhat unique to this team in your experience?
I think the number of guys who are all bought in and willing to do whatever any given day is unique. You know, obviously there are a ton of players around the league that play these roles, or they're uncertain of what their situation is. We try to do our best to communicate to it, but you can't do it without the character of the player. Like, the players really do care about each other. They care about winning. They care about, you know, contributing. And some days it's a lot, some days it's not. You know, I know that everybody wants to play, but, you know, when you see this team, you know, succeeding, and you see that, you know, the reality is I do play, you know, 10 to 12 players a night, position player wise. I have closed, I think, three or four pitchers this year. Like, those guys know that their turn's going to come. It just might not be today. And I do appreciate that as a manager. It allows me to make a ton of decisions with no sort of cloud hanging over any of them, because I know the players are all in. And Jake's a great example of that, because this is a guy who caught every inning of the playoffs last year in both the Houston series and the Cleveland series. And now he looks up. He's playing once a series and supporting Dylan, you know, as he's breaking in.
Just to tie a bow on that, I wonder, how far ahead do you plan some of your lineups? Because I know it's very much at bat, by at bat, who's the reliever, the matchups, but you mentioned, hey, catcher, I want to be strategic, I want to get everybody in. Are you 2-3 days out? How far in advance do you map some of this?
Yeah. I'm about a series ahead, you know, looking at, and sometimes, like, if you break guys into buckets, there are a ton of guys that have those roles you're talking about, but we actually have a lot more everyday players than people think, right? Glaber plays every day. Torque plays every day. Cart plays every day. Riley plays every day. You know, McKinstry plays virtually every day somewhere. And so I look for days. Like, Torque's not going to play today. That was decided before last series. Even if we had split the first two series, it's not a great matchup with Roop. It's a day before a day off, which is always the best day off for a player to reset. We're going into Kansas City, where he loves to hit. He's performed incredibly well. A fresh Torque going into the Kansas City series was the target. Matched up with, I didn't love the matchup pitching-wise against Torque, and then obviously getting Colt in there and being able to DH Riley today in a day game, everybody wins. So I'm about a series ahead looking at things like that, and then I'll audible. You know, I don't always go with exactly what I put forward for the Kansas City series. I'll pay attention to how guys are doing. Javi was playing third even before he got ejected and got to hang out with Phil Cousy. at third base. But things like that, I'm always sort of tweaking it. But the general shell of the lineup, I'm about a series ahead.
You got a good sense of humor putting him over at third base.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to make sure, like, I joked, you know, he joked with me the night before I sent the lineup out. His kids come in and hit and do stuff after the game. It's so fun to watch him be a dad after games. And he pops by my office and he's like, let me guess, third base tomorrow? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, no way. And I was like, yeah. So everybody knew going into the day. And eyes were on Javi. And I think it gave him a little bit of the cold shoulder, which makes me love Javi even more.
AJ, we love having you on. Good stuff. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care. We'll see you.
Tiger manager AJ Hinch, it's 97.1.
Hey, summer is heating up, and there's nothing more refreshing than an ice-cold Surfside iced tea and vodka or Surfside lemonade and vodka to break up the heat. Made with real brewed tea and real vodka, Surfside is only 100 calories, 2 grams of sugar, and zero bubbles. That's right, no carbonation, so it's super easy to sip and enjoy no matter what your plans are this weekend. Look for the can with the sunset stripes. Sold at bars, restaurants, and stores near you. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
Good finish to a Flaherty start. 6 shutout innings, that curveball. Expanded strike zone took advantage of that as well. Flaherty with his best start in a minute, and the Tigers win again. Love having AJ Hinch on.
Oh.
We were just talking about it when the mics went off. I like that he's given us a little, you know, a little banter.
Yeah, yeah.
Your show, you could talk about these guys who are
here.
Who we added in the offseason.
Yeah.
And we have, but I think we always want more.
Oh, sure. It was a sneaky good offseason. And
yes.
I think you look back on it now and, okay, yes, we know there's a third baseman that's playing in Boston that's not here. That was the major conversation in the offseason. And we talked about Gleyber Torres' addition. We thought, okay, yeah, he goes to second.
Nice.
Cole Keith goes to first. Spencer Torkelson's down in AAA. And we talked about Tommy Kahnle, but... You look back on the offseason, and those two additions have been major additions.
Think about it. They took them off of the AL champs.
Yeah.
Right? The Yankees were in the World Series. Kahnle's been a nice stabilizing piece to this bullpen. And Scott Harris could have said, we got a bunch of dudes. We don't need more. Always looking for more. Throws weird changeups that nobody can seem to hit. Like, it's just another thing to throw at hitters. And he's been a big addition. Gleyber Torres has been better than I think anybody could have anticipated.
That's part of my point.
His walk rate, significantly better. His plate discipline, hey, credit to the Tigers for unlocking a little more from him. And his defense, that was an issue a year ago. All the errors in the field, those have been a non-issue for this team so far this season. Like Gleyber, if they had gotten the player that was on the Yankees, we'd be happy. They got someone even better. So, sure, we can talk about them more. But AJ, insightful, entertaining, great to have him on. To his point, though, we always want more. We are going to talk about a potential Tiger trade coming up at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. When you're in first place and you have 5 top 100 prospects and your president has come out and said, we will use those prospects to upgrade the team if we can, there's a name I want to float at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
All right, John. Let's get to Heather's news.
Well, for the second year in a row, one of the most buzzed about video game releases of this year features Michigan Wolverine representatives.
Yeah.
I guess you could call them. I mean, anyway, so freshman quarterback Bryce Underwood and former quarterback Denard Robinson will be on the deluxe edition cover of EA Sports College Football 26, which is...
Comes out in early
pretty
July.
Pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Right?
That's last cool. year, Donovan Edwards was on the cover of both the standard version and the deluxe edition. So this year, the standard edition cover will feature Alabama's Ryan Williams and Ohio State's Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, rightfully so. Two
studs.
Young, dynamic receivers.
July 7th early release? Not that I'm counting down the days. We're in 2037 in my online dynasty.
I have to look at what days you demanded off. It might be July 8th. He's no longer in because he's got to play his stupid video game.
Stupid or exciting? Anyway.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah. A reward is being offered for any information that can lead to an arrest in the 2021 murder of a 30-year-old woman in Highland Park. So Lauren Cook was inside her home early in the morning on Monday, June 14th of 2021, when men entered her house, fired shots, and killed her. Murder is unsolved, so now Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward of $2,500 for any information, like I said, to lead to an arrest. This is kind of some shocking news. Forever chemicals have been found in 95% of beers brewed in the U.S.
What are forever chemicals?
Pretty astonishing figures. Well, they're these words I can't say, right? I can't even pronounce these acids that are found in water, in drinking water. But the EPA did establish like a limit for how many of these PFAS, they're kind of called,
in PFAS? Drinking. Is that what that is?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like I've heard that term before. PFAS in the water.
Yeah.
Okay. PFAS. The P is silent.
But they can be linked to cancer, thyroid disease, liver damage, fertility problems.
And it's in beer, like a high percentage in beer?
95% of beer brewed in the U.S. So basically, the researchers, they tested beer in areas with known documented water system contamination,
okay?
Along with some other popular areas where beer is brewed. But it basically found that these
chemicals
are getting into the beer that's
everything
brewed.
We drink. Right.
You're going to die sometime, I guess.
Yep. You might as well die drunk.
Sure, drinking what you love. Like, I don't know. Because it's always like, he died doing what he loved. Yes. So, yes, with a beer in hand. Anyway, the findings, the goal is pretty simple: to inspire water treatment strategies and policies that will reduce the likelihood of these forever chemicals
getting into the beer,
right? It's pretty simple. Hey, I'll ask you, John, since you don't have any kids, do you have a living room kid or a bedroom kid?
A living room kid or a bedroom kid?
So apparently, the obviously non-scientific terms, but kind of trend on social media and TikTok videos. There was a woman recently who basically said she has living room kids. That it's like, I'm cooking dinner and you're right here. We've got all this house that you could be in, but yet you're right here next to me. Living room kids are kind of the kids that hang out in shared spaces, whether it's the living room, the kitchen, the dining room, whatever your shared spaces are.
Is this just introverts and extroverts?
Kind of.
I don't know. At home, can you really be a...
Well, you're introvert. You'd be alone in your room.
Well, then your bedroom kid is the kid that likes to hang out more in private in their bedroom. Obviously, there's a lot of factors that play into this. The age of your kid, right?
Yeah.
Those preteen ages, you're probably going to have a bedroom kid. Those kids that just kind of want to be by themselves and be upstairs, be in their own space where they have more control over what's going on. And then if you got, obviously, little ones, for me... I don't do anything in private. My kids are always there.
It goes in phases. And it's so like when I could tell that the kids are like having a growth spurt, like Jack, I'll be like, where did this kid go? And I'll go down to his room and he'll be passed out sleeping. He seems to sleep all the time. So at that time, he's more of a bedroom kid.
Yeah.
Other times where he wants to be in the mix. He wants to be with everyone and then their living room kid. So it kind of all goes
it
in
It does.
Phases.
And there's no right or wrong, whichever type of kid you have. It's just different types of personalities. And I do wish sometimes I had bedroom kids, but they're teeny, right? They're still little. Yeah. They can't really. Once in a while, when they're in the playroom by themselves, I'm like,
yes,
score. They're being independent, but usually they're.
Yes,
right.
Clinging
to my leg. Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's Heather with the news. All right. The Tigers are linked to a blockbuster trade. I don't know how realistic it is. We'll get to that. Plus a more realistic option at 9 o'clock. John, you have a list of rules.
Rules.
Fans want to change some NFL rules. We'll present it next. 97.1.
Hey, summer's almost here. Don't wait. Whatever you need, call the team at Mastercraft Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. They take care of my house, and I know they're going to take a great care of yours. Upgrade your system now, and you can save up to $1,000 if you just simply call for details. You can also schedule a free home in-home estimate, same-day service, if you call before noon, so you don't have to go long without. All you have to do is find more information on the web at MastercraftHeating.com. That's MastercraftHeating.com.
Tigers linked to a blockbuster deal in baseball. That's what happens when you're in first place and you have a bunch of top 100 prospects. I don't know how realistic it is. We'll throw that name out and a more realistic name at 9 o'clock. But, John, you have a list of NFL rules as proposed by the fans.
Yeah, this is on the heels of the vote that we had last week about, you know, whether we thought there was going to be a vote on the postseason seeding. The tush push, which was voted down, not to change that rule. So the fans have come out and submitted some of the ones that they would like to see implemented. I've got four of them.
Yeah, and by the way, you guys can add to this list 248-539-9797.
Yeah, I mean, are there ones where you're watching a game and you're like, I wish that was a rule or we could tweak this one? The four that I found. Number one, offensive linemen don't need to report. I think this is one that should be implemented. The defense can do a simple number count. Is Penei Sewell on the end of the line of scrimmage? If he is, he's eligible.
You got to diagnose the formation as the defense.
Yeah, and this is, you go back about 4 or 5 years, they put a rule in place that defensive players, no matter the position, can wear any number they want. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's fine. But if that's okay that a defensive lineman could wear a number 55 or 51, 50, whatever, you know, numbers that were previously reserved for linebackers. Now all of a sudden, you got a defensive tackle doing that. You could tell by body size who is supposed to be where.
Yeah, number zero who weighs 400 pounds is a defensive tackle. John, I think this helps save the refs from themselves to a degree.
Yes.
Is that about who reported exactly?
Number two, defensive holding is no longer an automatic first down. That one was actually proposed.
Lions like that.
And was not accepted. Number three, I'm going to switch the order up here a little bit. Eliminate forward progress. This one, I understand it can be a little frustrating when a runner gets to X number of yards and then gets pushed back, tries to fight for more, never gets back to that original, you know, point. I think this one is, take it or leave it. I don't think it's necessarily.
Yeah, I don't have a big opinion.
And then number three, and this is where, or number four, I want to bring in one of my rule changes. Make roughing the passer more lenient. And you ask the question, well, what does that mean?
Yeah, how?
It's very nondescript. Anytime you breathe on a quarterback, it seems to be a penalty. And to expect 340-pound defensive linemen when they're hitting a quarterback to somehow shift their body weight in mid-fall so that they don't fall on the quarterback, because the initial hit was legal, but, oh, their body weight fell on the quarterback, so now you're going to be penalized. That's just one example. There's a number of different ones that they would tweak that rule and make it not, you wouldn't have as many roughing the passer calls. In that, taking that into account for plays that would be called a penalty, I think they should be, within 30 seconds, reviewed. Unnecessary roughness down the field. And this, I'll use an example for Bryant Branch, who's kicked out of the Green Bay game because of helmet-to-helmet contact. I have no issue with the penalty. Helmet-to-helmet should be a 15-yard penalty or 10-yard penalty, whatever you want to make it. But the ejection is what I have an issue
with.
You
want more discretion there.
I want more discretion. And I think there should be a panel of, just like you have the review that goes to New York, goes to L.A., they review it, it's back. Okay, you're watching, you know, you're having people that are trained to do that make that assumption. Was both feet in bounds? Was this play supposed to be called a different way? Have four or five. Five former players of all different positions. Within 30 seconds, they make a determination. Was their intent? Was Bryant Branch trying to physically maim this Green Bay Packer receiver?
Or was it a bang-bang football play and the flag stands, but he stays in the game?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that would be one where you could also use it on roughing the quarterback calls, where you send it back to the committee. The committee says, yeah, there's no chance a 350-pounder should be able to maneuver at that point. It's not roughing the quarterback.
Yeah, you got to be quick. So if it's like a thumbs up, thumbs down, quick verdict, I'm fine with that, because roughing the passer has gotten laughable. I know we want to protect the quarterbacks, but if they still have the ball, like, that's the stuff that gets me. Yep. It's not, oh, they threw it and then the player continued and caused damage. I sacked the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. But you did it too meanly.
Right. What the hell?
What does that mean?
he's got the ball. I'm going to hit him really hard. And if he gets hurt, so be it. That's kind of the risk of playing football. He has the ball. It's fundamental to football. I think all of that makes sense. I had a couple as well. I would like pass interference to be like college. I don't want 65-yard pass interference penalties. It feels too punitive.
All right.
Okay.
J-Mo burns by San Francisco defensive back, and he's got two steps on him. And just as he's about ready to reach up, the defensive back says, you know what? I can't make this play, so I'm just going to trip him and create a pass interference.
Okay, caveat. And I think Tom...
No, I'm only going to give up 10 yards.
Tom had brought this idea up. Treat it like a penalty shot in hockey, where if it's egregious, there's like levels to it. Like regular old fighting for the ball, defense gets there early, PI shouldn't be a spot foul 65 yards
down
the field.
It's a level one or a level two.
Sure. I know we're getting a little in the weeds on this, but I think that's an area they could improve the game with a rule change. I also hate the fumble the ball out of the back of the end zone and it goes to the defense. They didn't recover it. You shouldn't be rewarded if you don't recover the football. If it goes out of bounds on the sideline, the offense doesn't lose the ball. They just get it where it goes out of bounds. And I get it. You can't give it to them in the end zone. It's a touchdown. You could penalize the offense. You could bump them back 20 yards, but they shouldn't give up the ball when it wasn't recovered by the defense.
The closer you get to the goal line, the more valuable the ball is. And if you are going to be so careless as to fumble the ball out of the back of the end zone, you should not get the ball back. If and maybe the tweak to go along with you is that the recovering team gets the ball on the 2-yard line.
Oh, so they're pinned in.
Yeah, they're pinned in, but they get the ball.
I don't love it. It's better than the current system. My last rule is maybe the most controversial. I would like any play to be reviewable. There's a limit. Nope. There's a limit. You can't do 5 of them. It'd be like in every other sport. You have a limit of challenges. And you can say, I think there was a penalty there.
So on this play, Jahmyr Gibbs goes for, 25-yard score. I think there was a holding.
If there was a hold, then it's a hold. That's the sport. We have review. You have to pick and choose. You have to be strategic. And the key is, John, 30 seconds or less. We're not sitting there in grainy footage trying to find it. If it's clear and obvious, we're calling it. If it's not, call stance.
Maybe that's the ultimate rule change, is all reviews, those that are in right now, and we could discuss ones that may be coming in the future, but they should all have a time limit of 30 seconds.
Clear and obvious.
Yeah. How about the extra beat?
The zero zero.
When the clock gets to 0-0, maybe there should be a red light that goes off.
Siren.
A siren, like something as soon as that... they hit 0-0. That is the, hey, play clock went off, ball wasn't snapped, delay a game. Not, well, I'm going to look at the clock, and then I'm going to look at the ball, and I'm going to give them a beat, and if they snap it within the beat that's going on in my head, then it's not a penalty.
See, when this gets passed, if they were to pass, let's have some sort of sound effect when it hits 0. I'd love to do the show, what should the sound effect be like? And let Greg pick 4 sounds and put it on Twitter.
Sure. Did we miss any rules, Tom?
I just reiterate. The thing I said about the downfield pass interference, to put 2 levels to it. To me, I think one of the great emotions at a hockey game is when you're hanging in the air of a referee deciding, was that a penalty shot or not? And I think that in football, where you would have fans saying, that's an egregious pass interference. Give them the ball wherever, or the spot foul. Or, the fans are saying, no.
That's just a normal penalty. Pass interference, yeah.
That'd be great. I know it sounds crazy, but...
It sounds crazy until you actually put it in. Like, that's how all these rule changes are.
Hockey does that exactly with a penalty shot.
Exactly.
You're in limbo, and you're waiting for them to decide.
And there's clear path fouls in basketball.
It's the waiting that I don't like. And again, it's not the anticipation of what it's going to be. It's just, I'm just sick of waiting. You've taken away the time and the momentum of the game.
But let's put this in the play, in a real play that happened last year. Soldier Field, Goff's perfect bomb to J-Mo.
That's why they brought up.
And so let's say somebody with the Bears, lunges at J-Mo to stop him from breaking away, but J-Mo was in the clear, much like a penalty shot. You'd be sitting there and you're going to New York, and it's like, okay, the Lions getting the ball to 1, or are they getting at their own 35?
Or if it's that egregious, give them the touchdown. Hey, if they can't stop the tush push, we heard it. Hey, if you have another penalty, you keep going with these shenanigans, we're going to award a touchdown.
You can't hand out touchdowns. You actually have to.
They were going to.
You have to at least take the ball in the end zone. You have to score still in hockey. The penalty shot doesn't give him the goal. He still has to do it.
Rule changes you want to see.
These line up for a 60-yard kick. A freebie.
These are fan-submitted. If you guys want to submit your own, we'll collect them. Some phone calls, some ticket texts to get to. 248-539-9797. Also mentioned some Tiger baseball stuff. They are linked to a big blockbuster deal, at least a potential deal. We'll get to that and maybe a more realistic option. Top of the hour. It's 97.1. All right, guys. If you're injured in a car accident, the law firm you decide on can make the difference between getting fully compensated and struggling to pay your bills. So you need to choose wisely. You need to choose a firm that cares about you. You need to choose KG Law. Lawrence KG and his team, experienced staff, they get you the biggest possible payout. They've got lawyers who focus on the specific areas of the law to get you results. The phone number is 877-KG-CARES. Online at kgcares.com. You'll see what I'm talking about. You'll see the testimonials. If you or a loved one has been injured in a car accident, get a law firm that cares about you. Call KG Law. K-A-J-Y. KGCares.com. That's KGCares.com. Why not? You get the news before the game that Vierling has a setback. No time to mope. Perez is here. First at bat hits a home run. Team has solutions to problems before they even come up. They're two steps ahead. You don't have Vierling. Well, what happened to this guy who can play center and third? Well, now his name's Javier Baez. They have solutions to all of these problems, and they're the best team in baseball right now. 36-20. And by the way, Buster Olney with ESPN has put together five stats behind their 100-game stretch where they've ruled baseball. He points out that the last 100 games, the Tigers are 67-33. It's the best record in baseball over the last 100. In that time, Tarek Skubal, 10-2, 2.22 ERA, 149 strikeouts, and 14 walks. He has dominated baseball. The second stat, the Tigers' major league leading bullpen, 2.78 ERA. In that same span, a top 10 OPS, 8th in that span, scoring 5 runs per game. They highlight Javi Baez, Javier Baez, 280 with some big-time slugging as well. He's done a terrific job, especially since Vierling has been injured. And the last thing they point out is Mize and Jober, a combined 10-2 with a 3.23 ERA in 2025. That's across the board. That's your offense. That's your guy stepping up. That's your ace being an ace. It's everything. It's your bullpen. It's your, yeah, your starting pitching depth, all of it.
And, okay, so the one thing that you kind of thought would be true in that 100-game stretch, whether the Tigers were 67-33 or less than, was that Skubal was going to be a dominant pitcher.
Yep.
Reigning Cy Young Award winner.
But and he's better than last year? That's crazy because he won the Cy Young and won the Triple Crown last year.
What you didn't know was, and I think you could, so the Javier Baez statistics only has to do with this year. You throw in Parker Meadows as the Meadows-Javier Baez combo because it was Parker Meadows last year at the end of the year, and it has been to this point Javi. That's where I think, you missed on that one stat because Tom had the stats about how good this team was last year at the end of the year with Parker Meadows in the lineup.
But it shows even without him that they're still atop Major League Baseball.
I think the biggest question mark going into this season, oh gosh, there were so many of them.
Yeah.
And they've proven, if there was a yes-no question, they've all been yeses, it's been Casey Mize and Jackson Jobe.
Yeah.
Didn't know Casey Mize coming off the surgery what he was going to be, and it feels like he is almost what you thought he would be coming out of college. Jackson Jobe being a rookie, the roller coaster, up and down, didn't know what, they've been really good when he's been on the mound.
And he'll pitch today at 110 against the Giants. Yeah, of all those stats, it's hard to pick out one. Like, Javi's probably the most remarkable.
But most surprising.
Yeah. But when your ace goes to another level, when your bullpen stays rock solid over 100 games, when you're 67-33, I mean, as hot as they ended last year, they've been just as hot to start this season. It speaks to it not being a fluke. And now we get to talk about getting better. Mm. You know, AJ joked, like, you guys get to highlight the guys we have. We always want more. Right? A World Series isn't certain, John. Oh, you can always
so
be better.
Funny that we had this conversation with AJ, and we're talking about Gleyber Torres and Tommy Canley, and the why don't you talk about the guys we have versus the ones we don't? But you as always, you approach the trade deadline, and I know it's still a couple of months away,
you can always get better.
These conversations are going
to
happen.
Well, and it's I want Gleyber Torres to have the best possible teammates, and I want Tommy Canley to have the best possible teammates, and I want this team to have the best chance to win a World Series. So there's a wild Bleacher Report mock trade that I want to bring up, and we can live in fantasy land, but then in reality, clock will strike 9 a.m., and we'll get into what I think is a more realistic option. John, I think we would all sprint to take this deal. It's a Paul Skeens deal. So Bleacher Report points out Skeens is great. The Pirates are cheap. Would they ever consider trading him with 5 years of team control? And if they did, you would need a haul. They ruled out teams like the Mets and Yankees because while they're rich financially, they're not rich in terms of prospects. They highlighted seven teams who have farm systems rich enough to make a real push for Paul Skeens. The Dodgers, the Padres, the Cubs, the Phillies, Red Sox, Orioles, and your Detroit Tigers, who have five top 100 prospects, all hitters.
Nice to be mentioned in those franchises.
The deal that they floated, you'd give up Max Clark and Kevin McGonigal, your top two prospects, as well as Lorenzo, who is your number five prospect, for Paul Skeens. And you would say?
Do it in a heartbeat.
Right.
And mainly because of one word, prospects.
There's no... McGonigal and Clark aren't even in AA. There's no guarantees with prospects. Would you keep Cameron Maybin and Andrew Miller, or would you trade for Miguel Cabrera? You take the proven star.
Right. And it's a young career, but it's such a promising career. It's been off to such a great start with Skeens.
He would give them a 1-2 punch. Scooble and Skeens in a 7-game series, throwing in 4 of the 7 games.
And then your other two.
Well, your other two aren't slouches. We just got done telling you about Jobe and Mize. And somehow Olsen's left out, but he's still a guy you could use in relief.
Flaherty?
You'd have pitching as good as the Tigers have had, and you'd have a 1-2 punch at the top. It would also insulate you if the Scooble thing doesn't work out long term. You'd still have your frontline ace. So that's the reason to do the deal. I would question, one, why Pittsburgh would trade a guy with 5 years of control. Two, is this the right move to make with all your hitting prospects? Yet another pitcher. Don't we need more proven bats?
Well, I mean, it gets to the age-old question. Does good pitching simply beat good hitting? And yes, you're talking about on opposite sides, but you're also going to have to hit at some time to score runs.
Well, and that's the issue.
You can't win a whole lot of nil-nil games.
Tigers pitching last year with chaos was really good. Tigers pitching with multiple Cy Young winners led them to World Series. They didn't win. You need timely hitting. We saw it last year in the ALDS against the Guardians in Games 4 and Games 5. We saw it back in the heyday when the Tigers would get to the World Series, but too many empty trips to the plate.
Yeah.
Are you going to go all in on pitching when you already have Fetter and you already have all these young arms and you feel like you can get the most out of them?
So... my initial reaction and this is where I judge whether this is we're kind of in fantasy land as we talk about this trade anyway.
Yeah.
But if my reaction is instantly no brainer, yes, then I also think that if you're looking at it from Pittsburgh's side of view, it's probably not enough to be able to pry Paul Skeens from their organization.
If it was Clark, McGonigal, and Jobe. It's a little more appealing to Pittsburgh. They get a young power arm plus two elite hitting prospects.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to have to hurt for it to be something.
I still think you'd do that, though. I mean, we're chasing a World Series here.
Because you would still have Scooble, Skeens, Mize, Olsen, Flaherty.
Yeah. All right, you got a five-man rotation. You only go four in the postseason.
Still seems pretty damn good.
Still seems pretty good. Okay, this is the fantasy land conversation. The Skeens, eventually Pittsburgh will trade him. It's probably not now. But the Tigers have the cachet. They have the pieces. They could absolutely make a run at anybody who's available at the trade deadline. And I have a name that I'd like to throw out there after the update. John, don't laugh. It's 97.1.